Time to take a look at rail issues and maybe some rail safety issues with Rod Kroonen, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads. Really pleased to have him back to be with us again. I know I was up in Manitowish Waters a couple weeks back to do a radio show, and somebody came up to me after the show and said, "When are you going to have Rod Kroonen on again?" And so I said, I couldn't remember the exact date, but I knew it was soon. Rod, it's nice to have you back.
Well, glad to be here. A lot of things have happened. As we'd say, a lot of trains have gone under the bridge since we've talked last.
I want to give the number so people can join in if they have questions. If you got a question for Rodney, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call if you've got some questions about rail concerns, safety issues. Why, we'd love to hear from you. And I know you've got a lot of projects.
Well, yes. Let's just talk about some of the news worldwide. The Channel now is even better service that connects Paris under the English Channel. Mm-hmm. To London. The British have upgraded their side, and shortly they'll be coming into St. Pancras Station. They had a special test run, 2 hours and 4 minutes from downtown Paris to downtown London. And the schedule will be 2 hours and 20 minutes, and they expect to run 5 minutes early. Think of that.
That's amazing.
Yes. Let's go back 67 years ago, when we were faced off across the channel. Who would have ever thought that everybody would have come together with that? Now, similarly, Amtrak, who doesn't run quite those speeds between Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York, and then on to Boston, that traffic is really built heavily. You're 2 hours and 30 minutes from downtown Washington to downtown New York, and even if you have few hassles at the airport, you can barely make it by there. And the Boston traffic is Boston to Providence, to Hartford, to New York is picking up steadily. And that's got a lot of side advantages, too, because as the air traffic is pulled out of New York to Boston, those airports will be better able to serve long distance. Mm-hmm. The expansion on Logan International is not even really talked about anymore because there's enough space as they're getting rid of these others. Mm-hmm.
So the trains are playing a big role there and combining with air in a way.
Yes. Well, we'd call it intermodalism, and it should have for years. But now things are forcing it, particularly anybody that's flown recently, the delays at the airport. Flying is no longer fun. Fortunately, train riding still is. Let's hope nothing intercedes on that. But in Wisconsin, we have a lot of projects going on. The Adams Line, which is the old Northwestern, controlled by the Union Pacific, we're having extra signalization on that, essentially for readers. That's from, Butler, crosses over at Sussex through Merton, and then you'd have through Ashopin, South Beaver Dam, past Friesland, South Randolph, Oxford, Nisida to Wyville, and as our funds permit, we're upgrading that too. There's so much traffic on the Union Pacific's line out of Chicago going west to the river to the coal fields, they are using that as diversion. So people that used to think that was a sleepy route of 4, maybe 5 trains a day, they're at 7 or 8 now, and we believe by 2010 they could be 12 to 14 trains a day. And lots of these are heavy commodities that are being taken off the road. More and more people are shipping by rail. Now, where you have time-sensitive shipments, the whole issue of containerization is just starting to blossom. For what people in Waukesha, all you need to go is look at the Canadian National, the old Wisconsin Central, and before that, the Soo Line, north and south. They're 28, 30, 32 trains today, all 100-car trains, and about a third of them are containerized trains. Now, we're continuing to work on closures along that route. Now, what do we mean by closure? That's where you have a little-used road that we either physically can't signalize or doesn't fit our warrants. Maybe it's best that it's closed. That means there'd be cul-de-sacs put on each end. Mm-hmm. and the road removed. And we go about that very gently. One of Shannon's great skills when she's able to help me is meeting with town chairman and village presidents, talking about where closures are necessary. But it's coming. Well, from Fox Valley Junction down through Nina, 10 years ago, we had 14 to 16 trains and it moved to 18 to 20. Think of it, it's over 30 now.
Yeah,
this is just part of what's coming. And rail watchers always say, where is the best activity? Well, to Plainville, where the old Milwaukee Road crosses the old Sioux, right north of Waukesha near the American TV on 94. That's a good spot because you have 30 trains a day on the Canadian Pacific, the old Milwaukee Road, and 28 to 32. So you're going to see 50 to 60 trains, but central Wisconsin, by gosh, go to Junction City.
Well, I tell you what, Stephen Appleton has a question for you. So let's see what's on Steve's mind. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Been trying to get through with this question for the last couple times you've had the commissioner on. I'm trying to find out, who does somebody call or something to let them know about problems with the train? I'm in Appleton. Just last weekend, I was cutting my mom's lawn right about kickoff time for the football game in the backyard, so I didn't get to see the train or the number on it as it went by, but it just left a cloud of blue, oily smoke. I mean, I could hear it just thumping away as it went by. I don't know who to call when, I mean, they must have some pollution controls or, you know, have to keep up on some type of maintenance with them. You know, it was just terrible. I mean, just
well, the, you know. The Canadian yeah. National is very concerned about that, too, because they have requirements to meet. But what I want you to do is go to one of the crossings. If you're in Appleton, we have those two right at Prospect, for example. Read the emergency number on the bungalow, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then call that emergency and they will direct you. You will probably go to Toronto to start, but that'll get you down so they are notified of it. Barring that, while I try not to be there on weekends, I actually don't work a full 7 days a week, however my family thinks I do, you could always call us at the 608-266-7607. And because 2 to 3 times a week I talk with the dispatchers at the different railroads over general problems, and they call and leave emergency numbers for us. But we depend on the eyes and ears of train watchers, and train watchers are out there.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
On the second one, would that be the same number? I mean, I've heard you talk about how the trains are supposed to blow their horns in a certain way, like short, short, long.
Two longs, a short, and a long. That started my youth in the mid-1850s when they were just hay wagons.
Okay, most of the operators coming through the Fox Valley there seem to follow that.
Yes.
And we have two or three of them that even use what seems to be a more quiet horn when they're going through the Fox Valley there, and it's not so annoying. But the majority of them seem to just be blaring every horn on the train, and there's one in particular that, and I don't live where my mom does, close to the rail line. I must be a good mile off of it. But it'll wake me up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning all the time. 2 or 3 times a week, where the guy just sits there and just honk, 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 honk,
well,
all the way through town, and it sounds like it's an emergency warning. I mean, it wakes me right up out of the sound sleep.
Well, it could be. Okay, let's explain. More and more communities are working towards a quiet zone. All right, the road authority or your local administrator can go to the FRA's website, that's the Federal Railroad Administration, and they have a calculator on there where you can put in all the data on how you could work towards a quiet zone. Now, in Appleton, I've spent a lot of dollars, probably close to $2 million in the 12 years that I've been there, upgrading things because, as you know, it cuts as a 45-degree angle through there across many different avenues, and it's been expensive. So all your signalization should fit their needs, but you may have to have some median strips and dividers that that hold people back from driving around. But you could establish a quiet zone. The town of Richfield, led by the village administrator Toby Cotter, has established a quiet zone. That's on the bottom side of Washington County. The town of Lisbon, near Sussex, is in the process. They're working on the closure of Colgate Road. That's a 17-degree crossing. But the federal law states that if you can come up with equivalent railroad safety to whistling and meet the FRA's requirements, then you can have a quiet zone. And in many places, we've been able to assist, not on a quiet zone, because our money is so short, but on railroad safety upgrades where it's necessary. But you ought to go to the people in Appleton and see if they can start working on a quiet zone.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks very much for calling, Steve. Appreciate your call. And Brenda in Appleton, I believe, is next. So let's go to Brenda. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I was wondering if you knew of any good train rides with fall coming up in northern Wisconsin.
Can you get on a train and ride around in northern Wisconsin?
I can't tell you that I do, but I do know that at North Freedom, west of Baraboo, they have some good color rides. Our rail passenger service and excursion level has been so hampered by insurance questions, it's been tragic. We're in a very litigious society. So at the moment, I'm not aware of any, and usually people call and tell us about some. If anybody knows of any coming up, why don't we have them call the program?
Yeah, please do call if you know. And North Freedom, though, is the one spot where we do know where they have a nice
car. They do a wonderful job. That recreates the 1890 to 1920 scene and a wonderful group of volunteers up there. While we're talking about color, one ought to look at going to Washington Island. While it's not on a rail line, the Washington Island Ferry falls under our jurisdiction for control, as does Madeline Island. And the people that run the Washington Island Ferry, Hoyt Purrington and his group, are just wonderful. And Door County, this time of the year, for colors and riding that ferry across, you want to have a jacket on. The weather turned on us last Tuesday. Fall came early. But
all right, Brenda, thanks for calling. And Norm in New Auburn, I believe, is next. So let's go to Norm. Hi, Norm.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I was just wondering. I enjoy listening to your reports, Mr. Kernan.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering about... how come they don't put more of these 18-wheelers on flat cars?
Well, that's all driven by economics. Now, what he's talking about are semi-trailers, and the world is moving to containerization. Boy, are they moving to containerization fast because of everything that's come in from an Orient. The big ports, of course, are Long Beach and Los Angeles. That's the largest port. I understand that's about 40% of our incoming container traffic. And then Oakland Bay, and the other big one is up in the Puget Sound. And, of course, in Canada, Vancouver, and shortly, the port of Prince Rupert is going to be about 100,000 containers a day. 3 years ago, that was a sleepy fishing village. I've never been there. Mm-hmm. But that is going to tie in. The Canadian National has a 99-year lease on that. And all those containers will proceed across Canada, and they enter at the head of the lakes at Duluth and Superior, and they enter into a state that the Indians called Wisconsin. So if you think you've seen containers now, boy, you're really going to see them. It's a major change.
And now some people may not realize what you're talking about with a container.
A container is like the semi-trailer without wheels, mm-hmm. and you could double stack them. And that takes a special rail car that you will see. The largest carrier is probably the Burlington Northern Santa Fe. They're out of the Puget Sound, but they enter Wisconsin at Prescott, come down the river, go through La Crosse, cross at Prairie du Chien, and go out at East Dubuque. A slow day is 25 to 30 trains, and there are days when they hit over 50 trains, and sometimes 30, even 40% of their traffic are containers.
Wow.
But it's an evolution in shipping. We would like to see a container quote, port or interchange built in Wisconsin. We really have none, though some people would say the effort that Ronnie Warnick has put in at Acadia, where he ships containers at Ashley Furniture, but it looks like the most logical spot is where an interstate crosses a major railroad, and that would be at Portage, where the I-94 and 90 and I-39, plus it's about halfway between the Twin Cities and Chicago.
Yeah.
And as fuel costs go up, and as one looks at the world on fuel in changes, did you ever think we'd be pleased to see gas settle down at $3 a gallon? No. Now, I just use ethanol. I've got a flex fuel Ford Explorer. And a couple weeks ago, when Shannon and I were coming back from the Fox Valley, we put $2.19 was in Columbus for the ethanol. But that's gone up also. Yeah. But when gasoline and diesel fuel, unexciting as it is, gets to $3.50 or $4, these have tremendous changes on shipping patterns. But we need our trucking industry dramatically.
Rod Kernan, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking rail safety issues today with Rod Kernan, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads. Pleased to have him along, and certainly you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Lee in Alma next. Lee, hello to you.
Hi, Larry and Rod.
You're on a busy railroad at Alma.
I sure am, and I'm not going to complain about the whistles. That's for another day.
Okay.
I've been noticing locomotives, they're black, and it says either Norfolk and Southern, Norfolk and Western twice a day. Now,
that's
who owns that railroad?
Well, that's the Norfolk Southern, but the railroad you're on is the Burlington Northern Santa Fe. But what they do, because all these railroads are sort of commissionists on their change of power, the Norfolk Southern obviously owed them some hours, and because you probably had Norfolk Southern engines that went all the way through to the East Coast.
I see.
So this is known as running off time. So they would use, maybe they owed them 200 hours, so they would use them probably not as far as the coal fields,
no,
but to the Twin Cities and back. In fact, an interesting happening on that, when they were running off time 3 or 4 years ago on the then Wisconsin Central, which is now the Canadian National, sometimes the locomotives wouldn't get switched and they did not have adequate restroom facilities on their second locomotive.
Uh-huh.
So the United Transportation Union and the BLE, Brother Locomotive Engineers, obviously got very concerned about that of these 12-hour trips. We had to work with the Norfolk Southern, though I have no jurisdiction with them. But they're a classy railroad. They have done very well. Mm-hmm. But the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, where you are, if you followed the economic news, Warren Buffett now owns 14.5% of them. And I think most people are familiar with the Sage of Omaha and his investing experience. He's about 80 years of age. It might be a wise move to look to start to acquire some of the BNSF stock in your portfolio.
Right.
They have a very strong future. But now, is your power plant at Alma, is that Dairyland?
That's the one.
Yes. Yeah, and that gets coal out of the what we call the PRB, the Powder River Basin. And I think there are probably 3 round trips a week because that's not a real big power plant. But that's a beautiful ride along the river, isn't it, in 35?
Well, as long as you brought that up, Rod, let me tell you this quick, and I'll forego my other question and just say, from Gillette, Wyoming to the cities, and then the Dairyland owns their own cars, you know.
Yes.
It cost more to get the coal from Alma on the BNSF than it does with competing railroads to get it from Gillette to the cities.
Yes, I understand there have been some cost problems there. And while we have no control of that and little input, and I'm not here to defend the railroads, but for years the railroads had inadequate returns. And now, as they have what are termed pricing power, their returns are much better. They never even had a decent return on capital. This is not necessarily a justification for rate increase, but what's happening is now called the real world.
Thank you very much for calling, Lee. And for the caller earlier who wondered about train rides, we had somebody did call in. And Spooner, if you go to SpoonerTrainRide.com, go online to SpoonerTrainRide.com. They have rides from late September through late October in
Spooner.
Well,
I'm glad to hear they're running this year because they used to shut off about Labor Day.
Yeah, they're running from late September through late October, so we'll catch some color in Spooner, Wisconsin, and you can't get much further north than Spooner.
Well,
you can get a little further,
further north, but that's a long ride. Very colorful territory.
Yeah, very colorful territory. So that I'm glad for that information at SpoonerTrainRide.com. And Lisa in Hustler, you are next. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have a comment and a question.
Oh, yes, Ms. Frohmater.
Yes, that's me. Spooner is a Northern Great. I think it's called the Northern Great Railroad. That's a good one. And Osceola has a St. Croix Railroad.
Oh, Osceola has a ride, too?
Yep, and Leona has the Lumberjack, but I don't know their schedules. And my question was, where did the 48 train go?
Where did the which?
The 48.
48?
Well, 48 was the term that came from the First World War, where they had 40 men in a boxcar and 8 horses. And that's how they were transported across France to the front.
Oh.
Believe it or not, that was before my time, Larry. Hard to believe that.
But do you know where it's located now, the gift that we got?
No, I don't.
I'm wondering if North Freedom has it or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, somebody else made it. In other words, one of the cars was donated?
Yes, each state got one.
That's right.
Each
there were some of those, and it's logical that it'd be at North Freedom. And every year, Lisa calls in, and we find a way to get her a Union Pacific calendar.
Yeah.
So if you will send me your traditional postcard, I would think by the middle of December, and that's always a beautiful calendar. Everybody wants it, and they don't give out too many. It must have cost them at a wholesale level of $5 to $8 to print it.
And now all the readers will be, or all the watchers will be writing into you.
That's right.
Lisa, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
If people want to know where Hustler is, it's on the Omaha Trail below Camp Douglas. The rail's been torn out down to Elroy. Tommy, when people used to ask Tommy, where's Elroy? And he says, right below Hustler.
All right. Lisa, thanks again for calling. Mark in Neillsville, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry and Rod. I'm sure both of you are familiar with that rail line between St. Paul and Sault Ste. Marie that used to be called a long time ago the Wisconsin Central.
That was the original route of the Sioux Line, and that's how it picked up the SOO to Sault Ste. Marie, and of course many sections have been chopped out now from the Twin Cities to Dresser. They go to the pit, and it's cut out from Amory up to about Bruce, and very little activity. Actually, the track is in from Cameron, where it crosses the old Northwestern in Barron County over, and we're hoping for the state to acquire that, to get that resuscitated. But there's really no activity between Cameron and Ladysmith. And then, of course, it is continuous from Ladysmith all the way to the Sault Ste. Marie, but very little traffic on it.
Yes, yes. You're familiar with the reason that was originally built, I'm sure.
Well, that was James J. Hill, who was the Great Northern. He was the empire builder. He came with his Swedish relatives across that line and settled in Minneapolis. In fact, half of the Scandahoovians from Minneapolis probably can trace their relatives to coming in on that train route. That was the mid-1880s, and I did miss that too, Larry, but that would have been a fun ride. But the train has great historical significance, that route, and we do think the time is going to come where the state of Wisconsin and the state of Michigan will need to form a commission to purchase that line from east of Ladysmith through Rhinelander to the Sault Ste. Marie in the branch line. because it's going to be more necessary for logging and other things, and we just cannot let that go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear you feel that way. You know, originally it was built to circumvent the cost of hauling flour through Chicago.
That's right.
And I just wonder why it wouldn't be good to circumvent Chicago yet today with the time and cost of going through Chicago on the eastbound freight.
Well, at this time, there's stuff that they can haul. They come in at the Sault Ste. Marie, come down the line they purchased from the Northwestern through Escanaba. And somebody said, where is Escanaba? I said, it's about 20 miles short of the end of the earth. Okay. But then it comes into Marinette, goes through O'Connell, Green Bay. All right. And then comes down to the Fox Valley Junction in Neenah. And then takes goes up through Stevens Point and branches off at Owen. The cost to build tracks and maintain them is so expensive, it's better off to take longer routes at times. But it just economics are what's dictating that, because the line from Ladysmith over, as I've looked at it, it's mainly 90, in some places 100-pound gas-welded, a lot of it continuously welded rail, but you would easily spend to upgrade that $100 to $125 a foot to bring it up to that, and I'm going to say that's a couple hundred miles, so the term tens of millions might be on the small side.
Yep. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Dan in Lake Geneva, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
My question is whether or not anyone still jumps freight trains to ride empty boxcars, and if this is a concern of the railroads.
Well, it's a very strong concern of the rails, and that's called trespassing.
Yeah.
All right. And the dangers with it are very high, getting off and getting on. There are still some people that still do it, but, boy, we sure don't encourage it. And a lot of the modern trains now are unit trains, so you don't see a lot of empty boxcars. So unless you wanted to sleep on top of a coal car rolling along or a grain car, in that case the grain car is closed, no, that's something of the past.
Thanks, Dan, for calling. Ted in Toma, your turn. Hi, Ted.
Hi, I'm calling from Toma. That's just a little north of Hustler.
Oh, yes. Well, you're on a busy railroad. He's on the old Milwaukee Road, which is the Canadian Pacific, and you have a lot of traffic, 30, 32 trains a day there.
Yes, we do. And my question is, seeing as how I'm right next to Tunnel City, and it's kind of neat to go out and see a train go through the tunnel, how much track still goes through tunnels in Wisconsin today?
Well, keep in mind that the Northwestern Tunnel, which was an earthen tunnel 400 or 500 feet to the north, collapsed after the heavy rains of 1973. So they then put that connection for the old Northwestern, which is the UP, over onto the Milwaukee Road, which is now the Canadian Pacific, to run to La Crosse. So they have trackage rights. So the Milwaukee, we should say the Canadian Pacific, has 30 to 32 freight trains a day, two Amtrak at 79, and usually a Union Pacific freight train over to La Crosse and back each day. So that's pretty heavy. In fact, when you bring that up, I can't tell you how many times over the past 50 years in the winter I have gone up there to catch the Empire Builder, as we would say, puncturing the bore to get a picture of it just as it breaks out of the tunnel with the snow and that, and I've never gotten a good one. Anybody that's out there, boy, I'll tell you, I'd put that on a note card if I could ever get a good picture of the Empire Builder or even a freight train coming eastbound just at the second it punctures the bore, as we would say. I've never been able to do that.
And so that's the one tunnel. Are there any other tunnels that are in the state?
In Wisconsin, to my knowledge, none operable. There was one on the old Illinois Central Line that's now part of a bicycle trail. There was the one at Hustler.
Yeah.
But tunnels are maintenance problems.
Yeah, I would assume. Okay, thanks, Ted. Thank you very much for calling. Dave in West Allis, your turn. Hi, David.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
I got a couple questions. I live at 60th and Lincoln, so Union Pacific, and then I have a J job site down in the Menominee Valleys. We get a lot of Canadian national traffic and Soo Line traffic through there. And we had a debate as to what determines the length of a train. Is it the pressure on the first coupler on the car, or is it track time across a crossing, or what determines?
It's surely not that. The railroad's concern about how long it takes to go across the crossing is low. It's contingent upon many things. All right, there are many areas where you have excessive curves, West Dallas and other places, where you're physically limited by train dynamics on how many cars you can haul. All right, but going northbound on the Wisconsin Central, let's say through Waukesha and up to Duplainville and that, northbound trains now often exceed 140 cars. 120 cars. Now, what determines the length there are the 10,000-foot sidings. When Glenn Curbs cut the deal in 1998 to get that traffic, they had so many years to extend sidings. So the Vernon siding up to XX below Waukesha was made to 10,000-foot. They've had a very concentrated effort where there's been crossings. Now, the other thing that controls it, of course, is air. And the train, that's the Westinghouse principle, during the winter, is air has problems. Moisture is compressed out of it. So last year, on northbound trains out of Stevens Point, where you were then getting into Clark County and Taylor and Rusk and Sawyer and Bayfield, that gets real cold. Because the air couldn't effectively get to the back, they had to trim back to 75 and 80 cars when it got below zero. Now, that had a big effect in their operations. And so through the years, I've gotten to know the sheriffs almost by personal name. And usually the call comes to my house at 6:30 or 6:45 in the morning because they went to a change point at Sheldon, which is just a very nice little town. Hi, folks from Sheldon. I must know them all firsthand. It's right below Conrath, which is below Ladysmith. And they were changing crews because they were short of crews, getting crews changed. So we had a case in the middle of January where they had a train that came in about 15 minutes early and the other train was dragging its tail because it was too long late. So we had a 25-minute blockage with the school buses when it's minus 10 and snowing, locked up Sheldon. Tempers rose would be the term. So I had to go back and negotiate some changes with a railroad of which we had no statutory control, but the dispatchers on the Canadian National, particularly Big Mike Lean, the guys are saints. They have worked with us so well. So getting back to your question, winter poses operational problems. Now, in time, what they call, I believe, an ECB, an electronically controlled brake, which is on each car, okay, will give them better access to the brake system. They might still have problems. This has been under test for about 10 years, and they haven't held up well. Picture putting your television set or the computer on a railroad car above the coupler and taking it from the Powder River Basin to Kansas City. That was the test train. If it's not junk by the time it gets to Kansas City, these are some of the problems. So railroads do not move quickly on things. But West Dallas, most of that would be switching, except for the stuff from the butter yard going around. But that's going to get busier. But right. We appreciate you being a good train watcher.
I enjoy it.
Thanks, Dave.
It's a good hobby. My daughter, who coined the word from one of her friends, ferroequinologist, years back. I guess I fit that. But she says, also, Dad, let's face it, trains are a disease. And she says she's got part of it. Of course, she's done more trips under the tunnel than I have. At least she sends me postcards.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate the call. And maybe we got time for one more here. Harlan in Kenosha, I believe it's your turn. Hi, Harlan.
Good morning.
Hi.
There's a lot of heightened interest in commuter rail service down at our way between Kenosha and Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's called the KRM project.
Let me get my question in. I'm a fan of commuter rail. I took it for 25 years into downtown Chicago out of Kenosha, but there are a lot of questions popping up about this proposal. For one thing, when the Northwestern ran passenger trains, there was a double set of rails going up to Milwaukee.
That's correct.
One of those sets was taken away. I'm curious as to why that happened, whether the state could have prevented it, whether it made sense. And then we're now dealing with a big new power construction, a power plant construction that's going to double the number of coal trains going up and down this line. We already have about 8 to 10 a day, and these things are 2 miles long. And I'm wondering how that is all going to fit in with a proposed commuter line on one set of tracks.
Well, there will be going back to a double tracks. We, meaning the people. The Northwestern tore those out because they had to maintain them. And one was adequate for their traffic at that point. You're referring to the days of the 400 when that used to handle 85, 90-mile-an-hour trains through there. When we worked through the power plant at Oak Creek, which is the largest construction project Wisconsin has ever seen, we worked with them, and I really have to give the people at We Energies, headed by their key PR man, Jim Clouser, great credit for working with us. We requested that they build bridges at 6 Mile Road in the town of Caledonia. They did that. They did many other things. So, because we knew we were going to have trains in the future, so they can't block that. And just several weeks ago, when I was coming back from my son's house in Lake Bluff below there, I circle in and I look at all of those. The bridge is done. It's done beautifully. They had coal cars parked on it, but they advise us that they will be able to handle adequate commuter trains when that time comes. The KRM project, which is now being driven by high gas costs, it's coming, but we don't know whose checkbook or how it's going to fit us yet. But you want to stay right on it. There's great interest in that, and it's going to work, and they probably should have Metra run it. Metra runs the most efficient commuter rail operation in the United States. Their clients, their riders, they love them.
Thanks very much for calling, Harlan. Appreciate it. And Rod, thank you so much. The time flew by. We'll get you back again, though, and we'll do this again.
That's right. We've got a few there that we need to answer questions for. Good to see you, Larry.
Rod Crunan, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, our guest today. And he'll be back. He comes back about every month or so, and we'll talk with him some more about rail issues in the state. Always fun to have him with us. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking about a new book out that is titled Important Bird Areas of Wisconsin, Critical Sites for the Conservation and Management of Wisconsin Birds. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.